Howdy, folks, and welcome to Moose Podcast number 432, Critter Profiles, Owls. I'm not sure how exactly to do the greeting, the salutation in this particular podcast, because I've sadly heard from a couple of you who lost your homes in the fires in Southern California that have been raging this past week. So I can't say how you're doing, because I can only imagine not really well. The ones I've reached out to me, I know I'm just lost of words, right? I can't imagine losing your home in the speed and ferocity in which you did. So prayers are with you all and all those who had the good fortune not to deal with that or any other of the natural kind of disasters going on right now. I thank you for tuning in, and hopefully you're sending your prayers and good wishes, and if not, clothes and money to help those folks. It's a tragedy. So, yeah, it's not the way to start the year. Hey, I'm using the Adobe Beta podcast with the AI voice enhancement. Couple of you reached out to me, said it didn't sound quite like me. So I've dialed it back to 50% this week. It was at 90% the recommended before. So let's see if that makes an improvement. I'm very grateful, though, that you folks have reached out and let me know. Now, remember that you can find the podcast on the blog post each Monday. And there will be there a photograph that has to do with the podcast, as well as other links. And at the same time, you can stream the podcast at Spotify and Amazon and those places. They also have the translation for those who want to see the words. Translations are getting better and better. Somehow they're managing to catch up with my unique style of verbalization. So, hey, that's all there for you. So this last week, CES happened in Las Vegas. Wasn't really a big one for photography, other than the cool thing was Nikon had in a case. And I remember these events. Two items, their space-ized or moon-ized Z9 that they're doing for NASA, and then the thermal blanket that will wrap around it when they're out there. The thermal blanket, that looks really cool. I mean, right now, it's a warm 26 degrees right now and spitting snow here in Montana. I'm going to be in later on today in Minnesota, where I was supposed to be -7 to -17. So that thermal blanket, that'd be really nice. So that's only real interesting news. Bedford's, my good friends at Bedford's Camera. You know, it's the new year. Most people got a lot of blessings at Christmas, so they don't head to the camera store as much, but they're still there. I know I got the used Coolpix A that I mentioned in the last podcast from Bedford's vast used selection. No matter the brand or the item, from flashes to camera bodies, lenses, all that, they have new and used. Best part is they've got the folks to help you find what it is you need. So Bedford's, you can go through bedfords.com. You can call up one of their stores. You could head into one of their stores, the new one there in Kansas City. They've got just marvelous prices. And when you mention Moose, you're going to see that discount after you check out. And that's cash getting put back into your pocket. So Bedford's, the sponsor of Moose Podcast, great folks. Please tell them thank you for all they do for us photographers and for sponsoring the podcast, bedfords.com. Critter Profiles. So this is something new to the podcast this year that I thought it would be, you know, I talk a lot about how you can improve your photography by just, you know, engaging a little bit more about the mind and the heart. But I thought I'd give you a little more hands-on material kind of functionality kind of information at least 12 times this year. And I thought I'd do it in these critter profiles. And I'm going to talk about owls today. Why am I talking about owls? Well, I love owls. At this point in my career, I have photographed every single North American owl species multiple times, with the exceptions of the saw-whet. I've seen them. I've never gotten glass on them. That's the only one I have not photographed. All the others I have photographed pretty liberally. I love them. I've had the great experience of working with a researcher with a southern spotted owl out of Big Bear Lake. He put a mouse on my head, and the owl came down and grabbed the mouse from my head. That was a heck of an experience. When Brent was really young, we were up in the Blue Mountains in Oregon, working with gray owls, and he had a grasshopper, and I guess the owl thought he looked yummy, so we had a gray dive on Brent, which was for me was just hilarious. Not so much for Brent. We've had unimaginable experiences with them, and they're so enchanting. Now, I'm gonna start off by should have been watching my script. I got what out of order here, so I have a book recommendation. I'm gonna start off with. It's on this topic. Go figure. It's relatively new. It came out latter part of last year. It's by Jennifer Ackerman. She's the marvelous writer of The Genius of Birds, another great book. But this book by Jennifer is What an Owl Knows. What an Owl Knows. It's a great, great book. On the cover is a saw-whet, the one bird I've not photographed, which is kind of interesting. But it's the science of the world's most enigmatic birds. And it's got unbelievable information with incredible up-to-date knowledge and science of these birds. I mean, right off the bat, the thing that if you're a photographer, why would you want to read an owl, What an Owl Knows, right? Because it's about biology. Well, kind of gets into what I was going to start talking about. So I should read my script. Anyway, owls have one of the most recognizable shapes and forms in nature around the globe. People know what an owl's shape or form looks like. So as a photographer, that's a plus and a minus. We're going to get into that. But if it comes to finding these very reclusive and elusive critters, keying in other critters can make a big difference. So for example, Jennifer points out pretty quickly in the book that chickadees and titmice and crows / ravens, corvidaes, jays like Stellar Jays, Canada Jays, they also recognize the shape of the owl instantly, and they will do what's called mobbing. So when you hear that ruckus in the forest early in the morning or late in the evening, and you find those guys around, you know that there's going to be an owl there. So that takes a lot of the guesswork out of trying to find them, just knowing that little bit of biology. So Jennifer's book, What an Owl Knows, is just a killer resource and kind of brings me into what I want to talk about. Now, for many years, Sharon and I actually rehabbed owls there in Santa Barbara, California, and then back in Mammoth. We had, mostly screech owls, Western screech owls. We also had a couple pygmy owls in that process. And we did it for about 7 years, which was quite a long time. Our last one, who we named Ken Cody, which is the part of the Latin name for Western screech owl, was actually an educational bird. I took it around to schools for, 3 years so people could see this little bird. And little is a key word. Cannacody was about the size of my hand opened up. It's the screech owls are small. We have very small owls, the smallest being the elf owl, this little thing, maybe as big as your thumb, that most people will know of from a Derrick Canyon, Arizona, to the big guys. You've got physical size, big, great gray, weight-wise, great horned owl. And we've got all of them from coast to coast, border to border, all the way up to the Arctic and down. We have a lot of owls, but they're kind of, you know, hard to find. So in this process, the reason why I'm talking about owls right this moment, as in the second week of January, is for many locations throughout North America, now is when they're trying to find a mate to start the nesting season. I know it seems early, but they tend to, and you got to keep in mind, these are all generalities. Things are slowly changing, but they tend to start now. And we have our great horned owl here at the ranch and in the valley. He's been pretty active. So to back up a second, we have occasionally cottontail rabbits. They're not real common because we have fox and other predators, including owls. So they seeing them is kind of sporadic. In the last couple of weeks, Maggie first told me that they're around with her nose. And then I was in the hide and I'd see them bopping around kind of before dusk. And then about five days ago, Sharon saw the great horned owl first hunting our what we call the back nine. And then the next couple of nights I saw it right at dusk gliding past, and I have no doubt it was looking for that rabbit or rabbits. And then last night when I was out with Maggie at 10 o'clock, heard him out there calling. And he's calling because he's looking for a mate. So this time of year is a great time to be out. Don't have to spend lots of time. You can do it from your car if it's really cold. Just turn off the engine and the music and just listen. And you'll hear owls broadcasting and they're looking for that mate. And that's the first indication you have owls in the area you want to photograph them. That's really kind of an important part. Now, once you do that, you have to be a bit of a sleuth. And in the book, What an Owl Knows, there's a number of methodologies that are mentioned in there and described in some detail how the biologists and researchers are actually finding these guys in the field. Things from whitewash to owl pellets. All these are indicating day roosts and night roosts, and you start finding nests. Okay, so you're out there, you're looking for them. First thing I want to caution you about is that owls can be and have been known to be dangerous. The most famous case that's in a book is an English photographer named Eric Hosking, and this is back in the 70s. And he was 28 years old. At the time, he was a pretty accomplished bird photographer. He wasn't new to it. He knew his basic biology. And he was photographing a tawny owl that ended up, and tawny owl is a big owl. It's not a little guy, it's a big owl. The tawny owl swooped down and hit him in the face, and he actually lost an eye to that owl. It hit the eye, and that was that. So you've got to remember that they have a lot of power. You read about some of the owls that aren't in North America and the power they have in their talons. It's formidable. So keep that in mind. Next, they are secretive for a reason. So when you find one, the first thing you have to do is go in slow motion. Really slow down. Really, really. I had a group with me a couple years ago on gray horned owl, and it took us about an hour to walk 50 yards, 60 yards around a position to photograph that owl. Why so slow? When you go slow like that, the owls, in my personal opinion, to say, oh, well, one, they respect my space. And two, if they're that stupid, how dangerous can they be? So you're going really slow, small steps. Now, owls have incredible eyesight, but even better hearing. Now, most species, their ears are not perpendicular on their head like ours. They're you could say, at 9 and at 4 o'clock, or 10 and 4 o'clock, I should say. And that big facial disc they have brings those sounds they hear into those ears, to which they can triangulate. I mean, you've got the spotted owl, which is such a great hunter. Its hearing is so good that when a flying squirrel hits a tree trunk at night, it hears that sound and is able to actually know the distance and place and launch and pick that owl off that trunk. Let that sit in. That's amazing hearing. So as photographers, as you're slowly walking, you don't want to be making a ton of noise. If it's a day roost, you're going to wake up the owl and it's going to think it's a predator, because if you move fast, that's how, you know, they tend to do when they're about ready to rush the prey, not when they're stalking it. If it's at nighttime, more likely the owl is going to be hunting and you're going to interrupt its hunting. It's going to go somewhere where it can hear easily. So slow motion, really slow. Okay. Now, let's say you've got eyes on the owl and you're making progress towards it. Now we got to deal with the photographic part of it. This can be complicated. So most of the time, and when it's not the case, you know, knock on wood, count your blessings, it's low light level. So you're probably going to have to raise your ISO right off the bat. That's just going to be a given. It's dark. And they're moving. They're not just a statue. So you got to raise it 1600 or 3200. There's the first start. If it's really dark, you might need to bring in flash, which is doable. Here's the caveat. You've got an owl, both those eyes are forward on their head, just like ours, where most birds and a lot of mammals have them on the side of their head. Both the owl's eyes are in the front. And as you'll read in What an Owl Knows, all those cones, they are to reflect and bounce and amplify light. If you just put a flash in a hot shoe, you're gonna have purple eye, a form of red eye, that even Photoshop can't deal with. It's unbelievable. If you just put it up in your standard bracket, you're going to have that same purple red eye. It doesn't go away. The minimum distance above the lens axis the flash has to be to remove that red eye, that purple eye, is 18 inches. I have an extension bar that's 21 inches, so I have my normal flash arm on the Z600F4 TC lens. And then onto that, I have a 21-inch extension bar. So the flash is going to be that high above. And that way, you can light up the bird. Don't make it look like you're a Hollywood, you know, opening and it's just like this headlights. You want to have just enough to kiss the bird. But at 21 inches, you won't have any of that red eye, purple eye, because that could be the death of a photograph. But I try not to have to use flash. One, because carrying a flash around when it's extended that high, you have to watch for boughs of trees because you instantly can hit them. And you have to have the alignment so it hits just perfectly at the distance that you're focusing, or else it won't kiss that bird. So there's a lot of challenges, and you're already trying to walk so slow and quietly. And so that flash just complicates it. All right, so you've got either that or the other. Now you have those two eyes. Here comes an important question you might not think of. Do I want my photograph of my owl to have one eye or two eyes? Now, if you're photographing a bird, a regular bird, like a passerine, right? One eye, that's normal. Everything, that's kind of like, yeah, that's how we see birds, just one eye. But that's not how we see, or more importantly, perceive owls. So one eye, Yeah, I try to avoid one eye. Now, can one eye be a sliver, not the whole round eye? Of course. But boy, having both eyes really makes a difference in that owl photograph. So you try to have the owl's eyes forward. And I believe, don't quote me, read what an owl knows, but I've always under the assumption that an owl can rotate its head 340 degrees. I think that's what it is. It's not a full 360. But anyway, that's a lot of rotation. So in the process of it echolocating, if it's hunting, that head's going to rotate. So you want to think about that. The other thing is also if that head is moving and your shutter speed isn't fast enough, the thing that needs to be sharp, the eyes, will be out of focus. So a bunch of things to think about there. Now, this is one thing to think about that you might want to practice with a local tree. And that is you want to bring out the roundness in the owl, right? They're kind of chunky. They're round. They're not your shape of a raptor or a woodpecker or a passerine. They have that very unique shape, and they're round, and they're so soft when you look at them. And if you ever have one in the hand, which since I did all those projects from the ferruginous pygmy owl to spotted owl, I've had lots of owls and rehabbing in my hand. The feathers are just thick, thick, thick. Their body's this little thing in, but inside there, you know? So that cute, round softness needs to come out in the photograph. That means our light has to be super, super, super spot on. Not necessarily mellow. Not necessarily you can't use harsh, but you've got to think about, you want to show that round shape. That's why you find a tree trunk, or I like to use stuffed animals. And you look at those and you kind of rotate them in the light because you need a little bit of shading, right, on the sides to show that it's round, but you want to have enough light to show all that beautiful breast, which has all those great patterns and colors to them. You want to do this normally with all birds, but with owls, because they're so cylindrical on that branch, it's really important to show off all their endearing features. So light's really important. This kind of brings us up to that one of the last things to really think about. Are you going to shoot it vertically or horizontally? That's really got to be something that's in your mind. Because right off the bat, most people tend to go, and it's logical, vertical. That makes sense because it's a more or less a vertical subject. The thing with that is when you go vertical, people tend to get really tight. And owls need space in the frame. I mean, if you can get just a headshot with a facial disc and eyes, definitely go for it. But that's really the rare exception. That's not the generalized rule. So thinking about horizontal, right, placing it, a couple of things happen. First, you don't have to get as close physically. If you just do the math, you can see that as soon as you go vertical, you have to get at least 40% closer to get the same image size as if you were to shoot horizontal. So percentage of frame coverage. So horizontal. Also, if you're looking at editorially or prints on the wall, horizontal works in a lot of homes more than vertical. If you want to talk about the space in which it's living, because sometimes they will pick the most picturesque tree branch area to be in, you want to show as much as possible, then horizontal plays to that. Lastly, if it's thinking about launching and it's hunting, you definitely want to be horizontal, because trying to shoot vertically an owl, which has such a big wingspan and so broad, vertical, it'd be really small on the frame. So you want to be horizontal for when they launch. Now, if you don't have those conditions, it's not hunting. It's not going to be flying anytime soon. The busyness around it needs to be somehow a lot of those branches eliminated. That naturally then brings in the vertical format, which if you want to make life easy, you would do it with teleconverters rather than physically moving, because As soon as you talk about moving with owls, what happens? You have to go slow. So getting close physically can be time consuming. And if the light is going down because you find them at the dusk, which is probably the most typical time we find owls active, the longer you take, the less light you're going to have. So it's like juggling balls or wildlife photography. After that, then you get the shots. Focus on the eyes. If the tip of the mandible is not tack sharp, not a big deal, but the owl's eyes and its breasts are almost always on the same plane. So you focus on the eyes, the breasts will be sharp. That's, you know, what you want to tell that story of that owl. So there you have it, kind of in a shoebox, photographing those incredible critters we call owls. And that's the first in our critter profiles for the year. You folks have absolutely a great week. Again, my heart goes out to all those folks in Southern California. Prayers are with you. Everybody else, get out there, make the most of this new year. Enjoy this time of year. It's a great time to get out and shoot. And remember to make every click your story.